Samoa Joe is still the king of television after his TNT title defense tonight on Dynamite against Wardlow. The TNT Championship featured again in the main event. One of the things I love about this Samoa Joe run is TNT champion, that title getting more shine, TNT title getting love in the main events on TV. But Wardlow is going to have to try to challenge for the title in the new year because Samoa Joe is going into 2023 still as the champion. He handicapped Wardlow coming into the match tonight. He targeted the knee. That was the story they told. So Wardlow didn't just lose fair and square. He fought on one leg, even though he looked pretty good, jumping up on the top rope, doing sentons and all kinds of flying moves, whisper in the wind, like he's Jeff Hardy out there jumping off the top rope. But he's got one leg. So the selling was not exactly on point. But Samoa Joe not only has one challenger in Wardlow who got his ponytail cut when the match was over to let you know that this feud between these two men is not over, but Darby Allin showed up and Darby Allin chased away Samoa Joe with his skateboard. So not only is Samoa Joe restoring some value back to a TNT championship that was devalued during the reign that Wardlow had through much of the summer and the fall, something I do not blame Wardlow for, that is at the fault of Tony Khan. That's at his feet. The booking of Wardlow over the summer and the fall was awful. Samoa Joe restoring value to the TNT title, and Samoa Joe now has multiple challengers set up for that championship. There's more going on right now, it feels like, with the TNT title than the AEW World Championship. It's almost like WWE having to build up and prop up the United States Championship on Monday Night Raw, because they have an absentee champion. Because Roman Reigns is never around on Monday nights to defend the title. Reminds me of that a little bit. Kind of a similar situation. The Elite. Now, I know this is going to shock you. This is going to shock everybody in the chat. You guys aren't going to believe this. But the Elite beat Death Triangle to knot up the best of seven series for the Trios Championships. They are moving it to a Game 7. I know you are all going to be very shocked by this. And so it will go to a seventh and final match. It will be a ladder match in 2 weeks in Los Angeles. By the way, you know, we have that big Dynamite coming up in LA in 2 weeks at the Forum. Have they said anything since that segment on TV weeks ago with Saraya talking about how I'm going to find myself a partner for that match? Unless I missed it, have they even mentioned that match? I don't think they've mentioned that match at all on TV since then. Kind of strange. But there is a big show coming up at the LA Forum in a couple of weeks, and that is where the Best of Seven series will conclude, and I think we all know how that series is going to end. I think we all know who's going to walk away with a win in that series between those two teams. Next week's Dynamite, though, before we get to LA, Dynamite is going to be in Seattle next week. That is going to be the very first Dynamite of 2023. And it is going to be on the very same day as Wrestle Kingdom. So that's going to be a very busy day next Wednesday. But more importantly than that, starting next Wednesday, Dynamite is going to have a new look. So they are updating the graphics. They are updating the intro. They are updating the set. Tony Khan has said the set, everything. Everything is going to look different. Dynamite is getting a fresh coat of paint. It's getting a refresh, which the show really hasn't had since it debuted back in 2019. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this new look is. I've seen the trailer that they put together, and oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe all the people who watched this 30-second trailer or the 60-second one that came out showing all the new ID shots of all the wrestlers with the blue lasers and the red lasers and all the comments. Oh, it's Raw and SmackDown. Oh, it's Survivor Series. Why are you using WWE colors? Oh, I'm sorry. WWE, I didn't know WWE owned the colors red and blue. Why don't we wait until next Wednesday and then we can judge what the new look of the show is? I couldn't believe pages of comments and threads on social media about, oh my God, I can't believe that. This is terrible. This looks awful. This is just a WWE ripoff. Already the comments are starting. I'm looking forward to seeing what the new look is going to be next week. I think that color scheme is perfectly fine. But I'm going to wait until next Wednesday. We'll all get to see it together. But I think that the show is certainly due for a refresh. I think it's due for an update. As far as tonight's show, though, I thought it was a fun show overall. There were parts of it that I was not as enthusiastic about, although very few. You know, the women's tag team match was, I thought, very, very basic. And a lot of the stuff Ty Mello was doing in the ring just was very choreographed. There was one rough spot in there with her and Ruby Soho. I'm not a fan of the booking of Ruby Soho and the continuous losing of Ruby Soho. I can see what they're, I can hope anyway, and see what they're building to with her and Ty Mello, but I don't see how this is doing Ruby Soho any favors at all. So that's one aspect of the show I didn't like. But overall, I thought it was a fun show, and I enjoyed it. This is your final AEW Dynamite review for 2022. You guys have stuck with me all year long, and this is it. It is the final Dynamite review for the year. It is December 28th, 2022. This was the New Year's Smash episode. So let's dive right into this show here. On this final Dynamite of the year, we open things with the American Dragon. Always a good way to start the show with Bryan Danielson, one-on-one, with All Ego Ethan Page. Stokely Hathaway was out there with Ethan. He was wearing a hat on his head because Bryan bullied him last week about the glare from his bald head. So he came out wearing a hat this time, an AEW logo hat. MJF's music hit. He was watching, though, from the skybox. He did not come out down the tunnel. He was up in the skybox with his Burberry belt. He was drinking some champagne. And he had a lady friend with him, a lady friend who was not identified. He told Brain Damage Bryan that he found the only hot chick in all of Colorado. So he was up there having a good time. Page attacked Bryan from behind. He pointed up at MJF, though, and says, "When I get done with him, I'm coming after you." And this crowd was molten hot tonight for Bryan Danielson. This was definitely a Bryan Danielson crowd here in Colorado. Page placed Bryan on the top rope. He was setting up for a superplex. Bryan landed a headbutt that sent him backwards. And Danielson came off the top with a shotgun dropkick. Then he kicked up. Stokely got up on the apron for the distraction. Bryan flicked his hat off and then flipped him off. And Page tried to surprise Bryan from behind. Bryan sent him to the floor, followed up with a suicide dive through the ropes. We got a picture-in-picture. Ethan Page was in control for pretty much the entire picture-in-picture. After the break, Bryan hit a top rope Hurricane Rana. Low-bridged Page out to the floor. He went flying out to the floor next to Stokely. And so Bryan went for a knee strike. He was trying for a knee strike off the apron. And the idea was that Stokely would move Ethan Page out of the way, which he did, or at least he attempted to. I don't know if, Bryan maybe, got a little too much distance. It looked like he kind of caught Ethan Page, but he didn't catch him entirely. So it was a bit of an awkward spot. Page then sent Bryan into the ring steps, power slammed him on the floor outside. He got Bryan in the ring, landed a cutter for a near fall. Page went for another power slam, but Bryan countered into a float over DDT. And Danielson transitioned into the lapel lock. Page, though, was able to scoot over and got his foot on the bottom rope. So he was able to get the rope break. Bryan headed up, and he was holding his head. And he was selling that he was a little woozy. Page caught him. Up top, he was setting up for what looked like maybe an avalanche power slam where he was going to get him on his shoulder. Bryan, though, laid in some elbows. Page, though, he got him on his shoulder anyway, and that's exactly what he hit. He hit an avalanche power slam from the middle rope. He covered Danielson, but he kicked out before the three count. So he got him up for the Ego's Edge, and he's holding him up there for a while, and he's kind of showing off. Bryan slipped out, though, and he connected with the Busaiku knee. Love saying that. The Busaiku knee. And he connected. After that, he started raining down stomps on Ethan Page. He applied the Regal Stretch, which was never identified by name. But he applied the Regal Stretch. Page was already out, though, from the stomps. So the referee immediately called for the stoppage, and he passed out. Ethan Page did not tap out, but he passed out. Bryan Danielson picks up the win. After the match, Bryan climbed up on the ropes. He pointed up at MJF in his skybox, and he was motioning for him to come on down, come down to the ring. And MJF was like, "You want me down there?" But he never came down. I thought this was a very good opener, and it was helped by a rabidly pro-Bryan Danielson crowd. They said that they were, I guess, in a suburb of Denver. They were not in Denver proper. But they were nearby, in Denver, Colorado tonight. Between MJF calling him Brain Damage Brian and the fact that during this match, Danielson was holding his head and, you know, even Excalibur made mention of it on commentary that, you know, Brian was kind of, you know, holding his head and he looked a little woozy. I can just see the outrage coming for whatever angle they're going to do in the build up to this match with Danielson and MJF. You know, MJF will do something dastardly and they'll play off the concussions. They'll play off the head injury and everybody's going to get outraged. You know, it's coming. We got a little taste of it tonight. You know, people are going to get upset. It's only a matter of time. But this is very good. So we had Samoa Joe and Wardlow. They were coming up later on in the main event. And we got a video package hyping up that match. Renee Paquette was in the back to interview Wardlow, who said that there had already been too much talking and not enough action. Samoa Joe appeared. A wild Samoa Joe showed up, and he hit Wardlow in the knee with a pipe. And he was screaming at him, "I did this to you. I want you to know I did this." So we had drama about Wardlow's condition heading into the main event. Would he or would he not be cleared to compete in the main event? That was the story heading into the TNT Championship match. We head to a different part of the backstage area where the former AEW World Champion Hangman Adam Page was sitting being evaluated by one of the AEW doctors. He was flanked by the Dark Order, so Evil Uno was there, John Silver, I believe Alex Reynolds was there as well. And Renee showed up and asked him, "How are you?" And he said that it's week to week. He doesn't really have any good answers. She asked if he was interested in this next match coming up, which involves Jon Moxley. And we know Renee has a vested interest in that match, but she wanted to know how Hangman felt. And all of a sudden, he popped up. He got all animated, like he was ready to go out there. Oh, Jon Moxley's up next. So John Silver had to calm him down. And the doctor said, "Look, you could get back in the ring potentially in 2 weeks, but he has to behave himself. He has to follow doctor's orders. He has to keep himself from another setback. Every time you go out there, every time you go to attack Jon Moxley, you get hit in the head, something happens. So if you can avoid that, in 2 weeks, you might get cleared. In 2 weeks, just so happens, as Hangman pointed out, he goes, that's LA. That's the big show at the Forum in LA. And he thought about it and he said, all right, I'll be on my best behavior. So now we have a return date for Hangman Page. Next up was the Wrestler of the Year for 2022. If you missed it, I was out with my all my awards, my end of the year awards, as I do every year. It's up on the channel now. And on episode 788, top 15 matches of 2022, many of which came from AEW. And the Wrestler of the Year, Tag Team of the Year, Best and Worst Show of the Year, Rookie of the Year, it's all up. And my Rookie of the Year, my Wrestler of the Year, he ain't no rookie. My Wrestler of the Year for 2022, Jon Moxley. And I go through the whole thing as far as why I think Jon Moxley is deserving of that honor. So we have our Wrestler of the Year. And Claudio Castagnoli taking on Top Flight. Now, for those who may have missed it, and I went back over the weekend and I watched it, because obviously I don't watch it live on Fridays most weeks anymore. But on Rampage, last Friday, Top Flight, Darius and Dante Martin, eliminated Jon Moxley and Claudio from what they billed as the Three Kings $300,000 Battle Royal. This was last Friday night. They eliminated the Blackpool Combat Club. The last few minutes of that Battle Royal is really the only part of that Battle Royal you'd have to go out of your way to see if you were going to watch it. It was very good. Those closing minutes with these two teams on Friday was actually very good. They picked up where they left off tonight here in this match, here on this show. They had an excellent match. This was actually my favorite match on the entire show tonight. Top Flight tried to get the advantage early. Claudio caught Dante on a dive, and he slammed him into the railing. I mean, this was pure abuse from the Blackpool Combat Club early on here in this match. And Moxley sidestepped a Darius Martin tope. Blackpool Combat Club swarmed him, making quick tags between Moxley and Claudio like a well-oiled machine. Darius worked over Moxley's knee during the break. This was after Top Flight caught him with a chop block, so that was their opening. So through the commercial break, they worked over Moxley's knee. Moxley came back, though, after the break with a front suplex on Darius. And that allowed Claudio to make the tag, and he ran wild. He was hitting corner-to-corner uppercuts. So he was, I think it was Darius. Was it Darius or Dante? I want to say it was Darius. He was bouncing him from one corner to the other, and it looked like he may have been tiring out a little bit. And then he got his second win. And just corner to corner, pillar to post with uppercuts to the point where the crowd was on fire. People were standing up and giving this guy a standing ovation as he was going back and forth with the uppercuts. So he had them on their feet. Claudio then shoots the legs, and here we go with the giant swing. He's going to give the giant swing to Darius Martin. And as he's swinging him, Dante comes over and he sees this, right? He sees his brother swinging. And if you've ever come to a traffic circle, it's like you're just waiting, right? You're waiting for your opportunity as soon as the car passes by so you can duck into the circle. He was just waiting. And as his brother is coming in, he jumps over his brother. His brother comes around swinging again. He jumps over his brother a second time. And then he makes his move. And he comes up from behind Claudio, rolls him up for a near fall. So he was playing hopscotch over his brother's body here. Claudio landed a neutralizer and Darius kicked out for a good near fall. And I like that because he has not won all of his matches or many of his matches anymore with the neutralizer. So it's kind of like Jericho. When Jericho wrestled Action Andretti 2 weeks ago, he used the Codebreaker and Andretti kicked out. Now I know some people in the live chat, oh, you know, he kicked out of the Codebreaker, but he doesn't win matches with the Codebreaker anymore. Very rarely do you see him use that move to win. He uses the Judas effect. Or he'll use the Walls of Jericho or the Lion Tamer. So I didn't mind it so much, just like I didn't mind this so much, because what they're doing is they want to show, they're trying to put the young guys over. And you can't fault them for that. So they're trying to give them something. They're not going to give them their current finish and have them kick out, even though everybody kicks out of everybody's fucking finish these days, so what difference does it make? But it's a move that Cesaro has used from his WWE days, right? To put people away. So to have, you know, Martin kick out of it is a big deal. And Claudio sold it like he couldn't believe it. He was in shock. He went over to the referee and was arguing with him. And even Excalibur on commentary said this is very unlike Claudio to go over and question the referee. So he landed some elbows. Dante tried to break it up. Claudio would not budge. Moxley came back in. He landed a King Kong Lariat on Dante and then took him to the floor, gave him a paradigm shift, double arm DDT on the floor. Dante sold this great. This reminded me of the Shawn Michaels sell from Survivor Series in MSG in his match with Sid. He took a bump. I don't remember what bump it was, but Michaels ended up on top of his head. He was standing upside down on his head for a few seconds before he finally fell over. That's basically how Dante sold this move. In the ring, Claudio, because Darius wouldn't quit, right? I think he may have chopped or slapped Claudio. Claudio pulls out his mouth guard, and he proceeds to absolutely wreck Darius Martin with an uppercut that will have him wondering which brother he is for the next few days. Am I Darius or am I Dante? I don't know. Absolutely destroyed him with this uppercut. And that was it. He covered him face down, forearm across the face, pins him, and the Blackpool Combat Club pick up the win. Moxley afterwards, he stood on the ropes. He was looking down at Dante on the outside and kind of giving him a little golf clap out of respect. I guess for their tenacity here in this match. This was a great match. And this was an example. Yes, the tree bump. Thank you, Beowulf. I knew it had a name. It was the tree bump. He took the tree bump. Upside down. But this was a great match. And this is a great example of AEW getting it right. And Tony Khan getting it right when it comes to the way that he uses his veteran talent. And we've seen it with, you know, Jericho also, but Danielson, we've seen Danielson work with a lot of the younger guys and even put some of them over, like Daniel Garcia. We've seen him do it. We've seen Moxley work with a lot. I mean, Moxley, and one of the reasons I loved the year that Moxley had, and I thought he was the wrestler of the year, the guy didn't slow down. The guy was on television every single week whether he was working top talent like Jericho, Danielson, the big names in the company, even a Sammy Guevara, someone, you know, like that, who's been around for a while, or he would be working someone like a Dante Martin, or somebody like a Konosuke Takeshita, or they would bring in a fucking Mance Warner, and he would work with them on Rampage. I mean, he worked with so many younger talents throughout the entire year, and some he gave more to than others. That great match he had on Rampage in April with Wheeler Yuta, right before Yuta became an official member of the Blackpool Combat Club. So we've seen examples of this where they'll take the younger talent, rookie talent, less experienced talent, and put them in the ring with the veteran talent. And if they're trying to get somebody over, these guys will do their damnedest to try to get these guys over, whether it's letting them kick out of a big move, you know, close, super close near falls. I think people, a lot of times they look at this and they say, yeah, but the guy lost. Like, how did he get put over? Because he lost. I think people just associate wins and losses with whether or not someone gets over. That's not how it works. That is not the case. You can work with somebody and have a great match. And when the match is over, yeah, maybe the young guy loses. But if the match is over and people are like, man, that was a great fucking match, and so-and-so looked great, he looked like he belonged, he got more out of losing than he would have if he would have gotten a roll-up and pinned him on a fluke and won the match. If it's done properly, you can get plenty of people over that way. And I think what they did here in this match is a great example of that. They gave these guys a lot. These guys went into the match. Nobody expected Top Flight to get a win over Moxley and Claudio. Claudio's the Ring of Honor World Champion. I mean, you're not going to have Moxley and Claudio go in there and lose a random match like that. But by the time this thing was over and all the near falls and these two kids wouldn't quit, yeah, you probably had some people believing that they had a shot. And no matter what they threw at them, they just kept coming back. And then when the match is over, you see Moxley, you see Claudio paying respect to these guys. So I thought they did a hell of a job putting these two over. I had another thought kind of strike me as I'm watching this, which is, it's been a while since we have seen a healthy Top Flight, right? Dante's been around for a while doing the singles thing or being paired off with other people in trios matches. Darius has been snake bitten with injuries, going back to the ACL. Then he came back for one match. Then he had a terrible car accident. He was out for another 6 months. So now we're seeing what Top Flight can do together. And it makes me wonder, all the great tag team matches that we missed out on with all the injuries to Darius. So now he's back. Now he's healthy. I hope he stays healthy so we can get more matches like this, because this was great. We had Renee. She was in the back with Kip Sabian, Penelope Ford, Orange Cassidy, and Best Friends. All my favorite acts here on this show. Sabian said that he eliminated Orange Cassidy in the Battle Royal on Friday, so he wants an All-Atlantic Championship match. But then Trent Barretta spoke up, and Trent said that he eliminated Sabian, so he should get the title shot instead. And Orange Cassidy granted Trent the title shot, so it's going to be the Battle of the Best Friends on Rampage this Friday for the All-Atlantic Championship. Hook. Where's all my hookers at? Hook was back on TV here for the, what was it, third week in a row, I think, right? Because he made the save for Jungle Boy, I think, 2 weeks ago. Last week he had a match. So this would probably be 3 weeks in a row, which is good. What have I been talking about, right? Consistency. We need consistent appearances from these talents when they show up on TV. Oh, Hook was missing for months on the main show. Now he reappears. Keep him there. Ricky Starks wins the Dynamite Battle Royal, gets a match against MJF for the World Championship. Don't let him just fade into the background. Keep him on television. Keep him in front of people. Right? He had a promo tonight, but he's going to be in a feature match, maybe the main event, next week on TV against Chris Jericho. This is what we need to see more of from Dynamite heading into the new year. Pick the talents that you want to focus on. Pick the talents that you want to push and get them consistent reps on TV. Because so many times in 2022 here, as we close the book on this year, if there's one thing that annoyed me about AEW and watching this show every week, and I'm here every week with you guys talking about this show, I have not missed a single episode of Dynamite. One of the things that bugs the shit out of me is these start and stops, whether we saw it, you know, during the summer, even with Starks and Hobbs, you know, where certain people would show up and then they would disappear. Now, maybe sometimes there's a reason for it if somebody gets hurt. Other times there is no reason for it. And it could be another 3 or 4 weeks before we see them back on TV. Can't do that. Get them consistent reps on TV. That's one of the things I think that we need to see more of from this show heading into the new year. So Hook was back this week, the FTW champion, 17-0 coming into tonight, his AEW record. He was in there against Balaam Lynx. He was the sacrificial lamb here tonight, Balaam Lynx. Hook lit him up in the corner with strikes, threw him clear across the ring, and he had a charging corner lariat, which led to an overhead suplex and the red rum for the quick submission win. This went maybe not even a minute. Hook kept the hold sunk on until Lynx passed out, and then he let go. Right, he just wants to make sure. So then after the match, Stokely Hathaway walks out without his hat. He's got Big Bill with him and Lee Moriarty. He told Hook that his dad likes to talk about how much of a badass he is, but in reality, he is the Southwest Airlines of AEW. Jungle Boy ran down. He took out Moriarty on the ramp. And so while that was going on, in the ring, we cut back to the ring. And we have a comical stare down in the middle of the ring where on one side you have Big Bill, who is a legit 7 feet tall. And he is standing next to Hook. And Hook is not even 6 feet tall. So you have to picture that. They wanted that visual of the face to face, more like face to chest. So we had that comical visual highlighting the size difference between the two of them. Hook then goes for a T-bone suplex. At first, Morrissey tried for a chokeslam. He got stuffed. And Hook was teasing a T-bone suplex on Big Bill. Big Bill stuffed the attempt. He went for a chokeslam. Jungle Boy got in the ring. He smashed Bill with a 2x4. Hacksaw Jack Perry here. He hits Big Bill across the back with the 2x4. And then he hits him right in, across the gut with the 2x4. I think he hit him a third time with the 2x4. He took a swing at him. He was trying to swing at his head. And Big Bill dropped, and he bailed out of the ring, so the firm retreated. Crowd was super into Hook and Jungle Boy. So here you have two more young stars on this roster who the people, the AEW fan base, are really into. So these are the names. Ricky Starks, Jungle Boy, Hook, right? These are the people, even Top Flight, people like that. This is the talent that I want to see push in AEW in 2023, consistently push. So when we get to the midway point of the year, we could be looking at some of these guys challenging for the TNT Championship. We could be looking at some of these guys, you know, maybe well on their way to challenge MJF later in the year. I could see Jungle Boy having a program with MJF late in 2023. Absolutely. Jungle Boy, Darby Allin. These are matches that are possible. These are homegrown AEW talents. 2023 is a year where, you know, Tony Khan is not going to be able to rely as much on bringing talent in from the outside because I don't think there's going to be as much talent to bring in as there have been in the past. There's a new guard now in WWE. There's a lot of people who want to work for Triple H in WWE. Tony Khan has signed a lot of people. Some of them may leave. Many of them will not. Many of them have long-term contracts, even if they want to leave. Tough shit. They're not going to be able to. So he has that talent already, but he's got a really solid core of young, up-and-coming stars that are of his own making that he could really rally around and make the nucleus of this company. Again, something I'd like to see them do in 2023. Hook and Jungle Boy are super over. Take advantage of that. Exploit that. Grow that. Hook disappeared there for a while. You know, he was getting over and getting over, and then we didn't see him on Dynamite for a few months there. But now we've seen him 3 weeks in a row, which is good. When Hook tried to T-bone Big Bill, and he actually got him up off the mat a couple of inches, the place was ready to explode. And then, of course, he stuffed it, and he, you know, you don't want to give that away. But when he does get him up for it, they're going to go nuts, and it's going to be great. But then again, I also thought they were building to Wardlow powerbombing Satnam Singh. And we never did get that because they're too afraid to have Satnam Singh take bumps. You'll notice he has not taken any bumps. He has not left his feet, which is probably for the better. But then, you know, why tease it if you're not building to, you know, a spot like that? So I thought we were going to get that, and we didn't, but maybe we'll get the T-bone on Big Bill one of these weeks. So they recap the angle from last week with Chris Jericho throwing a fireball in the face of young Action Andretti. Back live in the backstage area, Jericho is all by himself. He's wearing a black vest, standing somewhere in the backstage area. There was no Daniel Garcia. There was no Jake Hager with his stupid purple bucket hat. Just Chris Jericho looking into the camera and addressing his opponent next week, Ricky Starks. He told him to check on his pal, Action Andretti. And he warned Andretti to stay on the indies. Said next week in Seattle, he would end the Starks experiment. So a very simple promo to the point. Ricky Starks would get his retort a little bit later on in the show. Renee was in the back to interview. I like how, by the way, they have signed Renee so that Renee can take some of the pressure off of poor Tony Schiavone, because they were running Tony Schiavone ragged for a good portion of the year. Every backstage segment, plus commentary. So now she gets to lighten the load a little bit for Tony. Tony's 65. How old is Tony Schiavone? He's at least 65 years old. Or somewhere between 65 and 70. And no, he's not as old as Jim Ross. And Jim Ross, I think, is 70-ish. So Tony's not a young man anymore. So Renee is there to help lighten the load for him. She was in the back to interview Swerve Strickland after what he and his new friends did to Keith Lee last week. The less said about that putrid segment, the better. No Rick Ross this week, by the way. Swerve was there with his Mogul Affiliates. That's the name of the group. We have Parker Boudreaux, and we have the nameless tattooed guy, who still has no name. And Swerve said that we would find out who he is soon enough. Wheeler Yuta interrupted for reasons that are not entirely clear to me. I guess he was greatly offended by what these guys did to Keith Lee on TV last week. So Wheeler Yuta shows up and he challenged Swerve to a match on Rampage this Friday night. Then it was time for match number 6. Or Sace, as Penta and Phoenix might say. See, I know my Spanish. In the best of 7 series for the Trios Championship, Death Triangle and the Elite. It was also Falls Count Anywhere. This was win or go home for Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. And with New Japan, I'm sure, no doubt, holding their breath, watching this match. Because Kenny Omega is in this match, and they wanted to make sure Kenny Omega did not injure himself on the finish of this match, where he was holding his tailbone. I'm sure that was just selling, but if you're Rocky Romero and the other executives, Takari Obari, I think, is the president over there in New Japan, you're watching this and you're clutching your pearls and holding your breath, hoping that he makes it out of the match in one piece, because he has a flight that he has to get on to Wrestle Kingdom. He's going to be flying to Tokyo in these next few days. He's got to go to Wrestle Kingdom. For his sake, I hope he's not flying Southwest. So they cut to the back. No entrances, because they cut to the back, and all 6 men are brawling in a narrow hallway in the back. The bell rings, because it's Falls Count Anywhere, so this match is officially underway. We're starting the match in the back. So they're brawling all over the place. The Elite were fighting in their street clothes. Death Triangle, they're professionals, so they showed up to work wearing their gear. All Death Triangle had to do here was just win. That's all they had to do. Win this one match. And they are the Trios champions still. And this series is over. But would they be able to do it? Well, if you've been paying any attention to what I've been saying, and probably what most people, let's be honest, have been saying since the start of this thing, then you would know the answer to that question. Pac hit a moonsault on a platform about 7 or 8 feet up. It's like these risers that they had in the back. Hit a moonsault onto Matt and Nick Jackson while Penta and Phoenix were holding them. We had Matt Jackson backdropping Rey Fénix through one of the tables that had catering on it, so the food went everywhere. Penta was setting up Matt Jackson for a Fear Factor pile driver on the floor at one point when Matt Jackson, who was up on the risers, comes diving off with a cannonball, took out Penta for a near fall. So all of this craziness and all of this insanity is going on in the backstage area. And eventually all six of these men spill out through the entrance tunnel, the right entrance tunnel, and they make their way out on stage. The Bucks landed stereo super kicks to Pac and Penta, but when they turned around, Rey Fénix was waiting for them up on top of the entrance tunnel. And it looked like the Bucks were too far away. They got a tight camera shot of Fénix, and he kind of stood there for another, I'd say, 3 or 4 seconds, probably while the Bucks got in position. He's probably looking at them going, dude, I fly all over the place, but like I can't hit you from over there. So eventually he dove off with the tornillo, the spinning dive, wipes out the Bucks. But he didn't have much time to celebrate because as soon as he got to his feet, here comes Kenny Omega like a bat out of hell from out of nowhere and wrecks Rey Fénix with a running V-trigger. Down goes Rey Fénix. Doesn't go for the pin, though, even though it's false count anywhere. Matt Jackson then pulled in Pac for the downhill Northern Lights suplexes where he hits one, floats over, hits another. He's doing this down the entrance ramp. So multiple Northern Lights suplexes by Matt Jackson. As he's doing this, Nick Jackson comes flying in and diving over his brother in the middle of these Northern Lights suplexes to take out Penta, who was behind them, down at the bottom of the ramp. So he wipes out Penta. Matt then landed a double Northern Lights suplex to Fénix and Penta both for a near fall. Thankfully, we got a picture-in-picture break at this point for me so I could take a breath and catch up. It's the one thing I hate about these matches. It's just hard to keep track of all the insanity that's going on. So we had a break. I was able to regroup and get ready for what I knew was coming on the other side of this break, which was just more insanity. In the ring, Pac placed a trash can over Omega's head, and the Elite delivered a triple drop kick to the can for a near fall. Omega placed the trash can on Pac's head and delivered a V-trigger, and Kenny then picked up Pac and hit the Dr. Bomb onto a trash can for a close near fall. Omega set up for the One-Winged Angel. Penta pulled him, I think it was Pac, pulled him out to safety. Lucha Bros ended up delivering the assisted Fear Factor pile driver on the floor. Young Bucks were able to break up the fall. Penta attempted a Fear Factor to Nick Jackson on the apron, but Nick Jackson reversed it. Reversed out of it. Matt Jackson picked up Penta after Penta got backdropped on the apron. Matt picks him up on the outside, and he's got Penta in position for a tombstone piledriver. Nick Jackson sees this, and he gets all wide-eyed, and here he comes. He comes running off the apron, and they do the Meltzer driver on the floor. Pac was able to break up the pinfall on the floor at the very last minute. He came running in and just at the very last second was able to deliver a what looked like a sliding kick to break up the fall. Pac set up Matt Jackson a little while later for a black arrow. Matt moved out of the way. Nick tossed a chair into Pac's face. They delivered a BTE trigger then to Penta. Pac recovered. He broke up the fall. The Bucks were setting up for another tombstone. Pac knocked Nick from the apron. He applied a brutalizer on Matt Jackson. While he is applying the brutalizer to Matt Jackson, we get a split screen. And elsewhere in the arena, and in an area kind of in the crowd next to the stage, Kenny Omega has Rey Fénix. And Kenny Omega has Rey Fénix up in position for a One-Winged Angel. And he delivers a One-Winged Angel from, I guess, what was part of the stage, the grating there on the stage, down through a couple of tables down below. This is where Omega started selling his tailbone, like maybe he broke his tailbone. The brutalizer is still applied to Matt Jackson in the ring, and he's trying to hold on. They're trying to time this, right? So Omega slowly makes his way over. He covers Rey Fénix. They're out on the floor, and he pins Rey Fénix. Because Rey Fénix ain't kicking out of a fucking One-Winged Angel through two tables. If he did, I was going to turn the show off. So he pins Rey Fénix. Then Matt Jackson begins to tap out. And the announcer, Dasha, because Justin Roberts, I guess, had the night off. Dasha announces that the Elite are the winners of the match. Pat can't believe it, right? Because he didn't see what was going on. He thinks the guy tapped out. Why didn't we win the match, right? So he's, you know, pitching a fit. But the Elite win fair and square because Omega got the pinfall first. And color me shocked. This was the mother of all shocks here in 2022 as we close out this year, that the Elite actually have tied the series at 3 wins apiece, which means we're going to a game 7, everybody. We're going to a ladder match in 2 weeks when Dynamite comes to the Forum in L.A. for the Trios Championships. This was, it was fun. There was just way too much going on for me. There's just way too much going on. But it was fun for what it was. I said weeks ago that this series is going to really get pretty dull if they don't find a way to shake it up. And the way to shake it up is to add stipulations, right, in the later matches in the series. Because there was never any doubt in my mind this was going 7 matches. And so here we are. It's going 7 matches. Well, how do you make match number 4 and match number 5 and 6 and 7 feel different than the matches that came before it? You add stipulations. So they did. No disqualification. And then it was false count anywhere. Now it's going to be a ladder match. You're going to get Rey Fénix in a ladder match. So you know it's going to be crazy. And it's differentiated the matches enough, like tonight, starting in the back and working their way out to the ring, where this felt different than, you know, a lot of the matches they've had up to this point. So it's definitely helped having those stipulations and adding those stips. And I thought it was a fun match. Just that when you watch these matches, it's just a car crash. It's a car crash in action, right? There's all kinds of shit going on everywhere. Every second in different parts of the arena and different parts of the building. You know what to expect when it comes to these matches. Maybe the biggest surprise of all, no Hammer. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise. Because what did I tell you last week? What did I say last week on the stream? I said, I don't want to see this Hammer used again. Because we had a Hammer in the match. Kenny Omega got walloped in the head with a Hammer and he kicked out. And I said, you've killed the Hammer gimmick. There is no more Hammer. It is no longer Hammer time. Hammer time is over. Because you can't hit Kenny Omega in the skull with a hammer and he kicks out, and then we're going to continue to do the Hammer gimmick every week. The Hammer gimmick was killed when Kenny Omega kicked out of it. So we had no Hammer. So really, it shouldn't be a surprise at all. It makes sense. You're not going to go back to it. It's done. It's dead. It's finished. But this is the first match in the series that had no Hammer. And had no Hammer that played into the finish of the match. But otherwise, you know, this was pure insanity. And I'm sure, as usual, when it comes to these matches, it will be a very polarizing match. This is not a match where you're in the middle. Is that right? You either are going to watch this match and think, man, this match was fucking great. Holy shit. Right? Or you're going to watch this match and go, oh, it's the Bucks. Oh, it's Kenny. Oh, it's the same shit that we always see. Oh, it's the... There's no in-between. That's what I've come to learn with these men. There is no in-between. You either love it or you hate it. I fall more into the love category here because I just thought this was fun to watch. A little too much at times, but you will definitely have a divided opinion on this. Without a doubt. We had the Acclaimed dropping a new music video. Well, Max Caster, really, dropping a new music video, although Anthony Bowens and Billy Gunn were in the video. And this is a video about Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal that had references to Jarrett's entire career, including a brief reference to the lyrics from his With My Baby Tonight song from WWE, which really wasn't his song, right? It was Road Dogg's song. Road Dogg, by the way, for those wondering if Road Dogg did write the song, Road Dogg did nothing except sing the song. Everything about that song, from the lyrics to the instruments that were used, it's actually a really good song. But by his own admission, all of that stuff was Jim Johnston. All he did was show up and sing the lyrics. And I didn't know this, actually. He mentioned this on his podcast. I saw a clip, because everybody's got a fucking podcast now. And he was talking about this, and as far as the title of the song, where it came from, With My Baby Tonight, he had told Jim Johnson. Jim Johnson was great because he would sit down with the talents and he would ask them questions about themselves, about their lives, about their hobbies, you know, because he wanted to get to know them. He wanted to know as much as he possibly could about them so then he can go away in his studio, lock himself away in his studio, and come up with this just iconic music that he would come up with for all these guys. And wrestling is worse off, I think, for not having him in it now, especially WWE, when it comes to the theme music. But Road Dogg had just had, I think, a daughter. His daughter was just born. And he made some comment to the effect of, all I want to do is just be, he literally had a new baby. And he's like, I just want to be with my baby tonight. And so Jim Johnson took it and turned it into a love song. But I didn't know that. So I love finding out little things like that that, you know, we didn't know about previously. But they did reference part of the lyrics here in this rap. Other references, reference TNA. He referenced Jarrett never drawing a dime. Mike Graham is probably wherever Mike Graham is, whether, you know, I don't want to be mean. But Mike Graham, wherever he is smiling, I'm sure. Mike Graham no longer with us. One of the lyrics here from the rap was, I stay scheming like I'm Global Force Gold, which got a huge pop out of me because you know how many times I've referenced Global Force Gold over the years on the podcast. I covered that whole thing when he was shilling Global Force Gold many years ago. The gold bars. I'm sure many of you are unaware of this. That was a fun segment on the podcast. What year was that with the Global Force Gold stuff? It's probably like 2017 or something, right? So many years ago. Another lyric here. Failing upward is just your way of life. And you stealing money like you stealing Kurt Angle's wife. And I saw Karen Jarrett go online during the show and say, did I hear what I think I just heard? Karen Jarrett actually would be a great heel if they wanted to bring her in. But that would mean more Jeff Jarrett on TV, which we don't need. But actually, when they brought her in for Ric Flair's last match and she was ringside for that, she's great. She was actually great. She's a heat magnet when she's out there. But I thought that was a great line. You stealing money like you stealing Kurt Angle's wife. He also called him the worst Jeffrey since Dahmer, which was quite the line. Jay Lethal was not spared. In this rap, Caster called him Ring of Honor's top guy from its bad years. So anyway, I thought this was great. I thought this was a great rap. This is probably my favorite of the raps that he's done. We had Ruby Soho and Willow Nightingale against Ty Mello and Anna Jay of the Jericho Appreciation Society, or as they call themselves, TJAS, I believe is what they are calling themselves.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. You know, the holidays are here, and for a lot of people, it's a happy time. It's a time to be with family and friends. But for others, maybe some of you listening, it can be a very difficult time of year, or maybe worse than usual if you're dealing with depression, feelings of isolation. The holiday season can make that even worse, and that's where BetterHelp can be a great resource. They've connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists who can help guide you through these emotions and make this time of year a little bit more tolerable. BetterHelp is convenient, secure, and accessible anywhere 100% online. Sometimes it just helps to talk to someone, to know that they're there and that they know what you're going through, they know what they're talking about, whether it's learning the coping skills to deal with a certain trauma in your life, or in my case, it wasn't anything nearly as serious as that, but I connected with a therapist through BetterHelp to help with some issues I had sleeping. Whatever it may be, the benefits of therapy are clear. Everyone deserves to feel their best. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. As the world's largest therapy service, they've matched millions of people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists. It has the benefits of in-person therapy, but it's more convenient, more accessible, and more affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If you try it and you don't think things are working out, it's very easy to switch to a different therapist that you do feel comfortable with. So this holiday season, if you're feeling stuck, get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp.com/solomonster.
Willow landed a lariat on Anna to get a break in the match. Ruby and Ty Mello tagged in. This is the match that Ruby wanted. Ty is the one who broke her nose. So they get in the ring together. Anna caused a distraction, but Ruby was able to land no future for a near fall. Willow delivered a lariat to Anna Jay, but Ty took her out with a pump kick. Mello landed a DDT on Ruby, but Willow shoved Anna into the cover to break it up. By the way, very, very appropriate, you know, getting a Kurt Angle reference on the show tonight, wearing the Kurt Angle jersey here, because it is fucking boiling in this apartment. If it were up to me, I would be wearing nothing right now. That's how hot it is in here. The heat is blasting. It's going to be 50 degrees in New York this week, and the fucking heat is blasting. So I figure I'm going to wear a shirt that you can't tell, but this shirt has holes. It's a jersey. It has holes in it, so it'll give me some relief, but I am drenched. I am wet right now as I talk about this women's match here. So Ty landed a DDT on Ruby, but Willow shoved Anna into the cover to break it up. Willow took Anna to the floor. Ruby and Ty were trading headbutts, and both women collapsed. Ruby landed on her for a near fall. Anna tried to hit Willow with a chair on the floor, right? She was going to hit Willow's hand. She had her hand on the apron. So before Anna Jay could hit the hand with the chair, Aubrey Edwards reached through the ropes and grabbed the chair to stop her. Now, as that was happening on the other side of the ring, Ty Mello grabbed a chair of her own, and she was in the ring with Ruby. And this is the spot that I mentioned at the beginning of the stream. She takes the chair, like she's Rob fucking Dam, right? Van Dam. I think I left that part of his name. His name is not Rob Dam. His name is Rob Van Dam. I'll get it right. So she's thinking she's RVD out here. She throws the chair to Ty Mello, or to Ruby Soho. And Ruby catches the chair, and she's standing there, and she's holding this chair until Ty can get herself set up so she can boot the chair back into Ruby's face. Now, this is a spot that we have seen before. Other people, plenty of people do, not just RVD. But it made Ruby look like such a fool, because Ty took too long to set up for the kick. So she throws the chair, Ruby catches it, and now she has to stand there for what felt like 3 or 4 seconds. It probably wasn't 4 seconds, but it was a while. She stood there like this, waiting to get kicked in the face. So not only does she look like a fucking idiot, but then she loses, because Ty picks her up for her finisher, drops her down face first, and pins her. So she looked like a fool, and she got beat. This was not a good night for Ruby Soho, or if you are a Ruby Soho fan. I did not. It was a very clumsy spot. It did not come off as well as I'm sure they intended for it to. And I just didn't like the booking of the end of this match. Standard tag team match. I like Willow. I like Willow Nightingale as well. But standard tag team match. I hate that Ruby keeps losing. She doesn't feel special because there's no reason for her to feel special. And she got hurt, which was not her fault. It was an accident. But she got hurt. It was a pretty bad, you know, broken nose. Comes back, and yet we are still dragging out this Ruby Soho Ty Mello thing. Does anybody care about this? Does anybody really care about this feud? Is there a reason why this feud has to be dragged out like this? Can we not move on from this? I know what the end of this should be, which is Ruby getting her one-on-one and getting her revenge and getting the big win in the end, but I can't tell you as I sit here that, oh man, I'm looking forward to Ruby getting her revenge. No, I'm looking forward to this being over with so Ruby can move on to something better. So this was the part of the show that I just didn't care for. Nor is it doing Ruby any favors. So I didn't like this. Renee was backstage with Ricky Starks. And he said that he feels a lot better than Action Andretti. I'm sure he does. Action Andretti probably had his eyebrows burned off by Chris Jericho. He says he'll get revenge for him in Seattle next week. He said Jericho doesn't like that Ricky can think for himself. January 4th is going to be a masterclass in Starks whipping Jericho's ass, and he's going to take Jericho down a few pegs. We are very close, I'm being told by Beowulf, to our likes goal. We're only about 12 away from Be the Booker. How about that? Yeah, I'm sorry to say, you know, Ruby, she really is. She is somehow worse off. She is worse off now in the position that she's in than she was when we last saw her in WWE, and I didn't think that was possible. But somehow Ruby Soho is an example of somebody who came over and is actually in a worse spot now than she was before. There is no excuse for that. So we had the main event. We had the King of Television, Samoa Joe, defending his TNT championship against Wardlow, the former champion. Joe made his entrance. Wardlow's music hit. There's no Wardlow. And Joe is waiting for him. He's waiting for the guy to come out. There's no Wardlow. Joe gets on the microphone. He announces himself as the one true King of Television and says that Wardlow is suffering from a bit of stage fright. He said that he offered to have the Denver Broncos send someone over, but they had already taken enough L's this year, which did not endear Joe to this crowd any, but I detected no lies in what Joe was saying. Wardlow eventually hobbled out, started to brawl with Joe. So here we have the one-legged man. This is a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest here. Coming down to the ring, he's going to fight through the pain. He's going to fight through on one bum wheel to try to get his revenge on Samoa Joe. Wardlow hit a spine buster. Joe was dazed. Wardlow picked him up and slapped him right across the face. Then he slapped his knee, his own knee, trying to get some feeling back into it. Hey, Zizou, just gifted a channel membership, and the lucky recipient, so I believe it's random, the lucky recipient is the real CS02, is now a channel member. Thank you, Zizou, and welcome to the real CS02. Getting those gifted memberships in here before the clock strikes midnight for the new year. I love it. So Wardlow is smacking himself. The brother smacks himself. He's smacking himself, trying to get feeling back into his knee. Wardlow charges into the corner. Joe catches him with a uranage. He lands a few right hands. Wardlow, though, cuts him down with a lariat. Joe recovers. He managed to pick up Wardlow and delivered a knee breaker. So we go to the final break here of the match, the final picture-in-picture. During this picture-in-picture, Wardlow was on the floor getting his knee checked out by the doctor, but he got back into things. Wardlow hit a huge flying senton off the top rope. Then he hit back-to-back German suplexes to Joe on one leg, supposedly. A minute later, Joe sent him into the ropes, and as he sent Wardlow into the corner, Wardlow, who's a big guy, right? We see Wardlow run to the ropes with a bad knee, and he hits the Jeff Hardy whisper in the wind. Now, he landed awkwardly, actually, on the other knee, the healthy knee, and it actually looked like a spot where he could have legitimately injured his knee, but I'm sure he's okay. I hope he's okay. But again, just, you know, here's a guy who got hit in the knee with a pipe, right, and he's hobbling around as he comes down to the ring on the one knee, and you're doing multiple dives off the top rope. Is it really necessary in a match like this, where the entire story is built around the knee? You're going to lose this match. You can fall back on the excuse that you only had one good knee. Do you need to be doing the move? I know it makes Wardlow look great, right? It's very impressive to see Wardlow doing these things from the top rope. But I just didn't think it was necessary for him to use those moves in this match. But he did. Then he sold the knee, right? He was good enough to get up there and do it, but then he sold the knee. Fine. So a minute later, we had Joe got a leg sweep. Took down Wardlow, chopping down the tree. But when Joe got him in the corner and he climbed to the middle rope, like he was going to do the 10 punches spot, Wardlow powerbombed him out of the corner. And then Wardlow set up for his own powerbomb, but the knee gave out, so he wasn't able to do it. Joe attacked the knee and then locked on the rear naked choke until Wardlow passed out, and the referee called for the bell. So Samoa Joe retains the TNT championship here. Now, after the match was over, Wardlow was using the ropes for assistance to struggle back to his feet. Joe was staring at him. And the announcers were wondering, Excalibur was wondering if maybe Joe was going to pay respect to Wardlow. And if you know anything about heel Samoa Joe, you knew that he was not going to pay respect to Wardlow. He was going to do exactly what he ended up doing, which was bash Wardlow in the head with the TNT title, which disgusted the announcers. I loved it. I just love Joe as a heel. When Joe is healthy and he's on as a heel, he's fucking great. I mean, he's a great babyface, right? The people still chant his name. They still like him. But heel Samoa Joe, fucking awesome. So he clobbered him with the title. So then Joe goes to the floor. And he picks up the ring skirt and he pulls out a toolbox from under the ring. And he opens the toolbox and he grabs a pair of scissors. He gets in the ring and referee Paul Turner is trying to stop him. He gives a headbutt, takes down Paul Turner. So that'll cost him some money. He goes over to Wardlow, who's got the long hair, he's got the ponytail, right? And he sits up Wardlow and he cuts off Wardlow's ponytail. And then he holds it up like a trophy. He holds the TNT title in one hand, and he's got the scissors in the other hand, and he's holding them up there like trophies, and posing with them. So now we hear Darby Allin's music, right? The former TNT champion. And Joe is looking towards the aisleway. There's no Darby. Darby instead comes up from behind, hits Joe in the back with his skateboard. Joe falls out of the ring, and we get a final shot of Darby in the ring, holding up the TNT championship while Joe seeds and backs up the rampway to leave. And that is how they went off the air. So it turned into a good match, I thought, by the end. Wardlow, again, like I said, my beef with the match was just the psychology of it. And again, you can say that we see this shit all the time in wrestling. People get focus on a body part, focus on the knee during a match. The guy makes a fiery comeback, and it's almost like he was never hurt in the first place. And you could say, well, adrenaline. Yeah, I mean, you could always come up with an excuse. My whole thing is, did we really need to see Wardlow busting out top rope moves in a match where the entire thing was built around the leg and he was going to lose the match? Because now people are going to be like, well, you know, it's fine because Wardlow was hurt going into the match, so he wasn't 100%. And so he couldn't do all the things that you would expect him to be able to do, except that he kind of was. And I just think it's just warped psychology to have him doing stuff like that in this match. That was my beef, really, with this match. But Samoa Joe, he reigns supreme as the TNT champion heading into 2023. And not only is he still the TNT champion, not only is Samoa Joe still the king of television, but he now has not one but two potential challengers. He has two opponents now, two feuds heading into the new year. He's got Wardlow, and he's got Darby Allin. Now, I fully expect Wardlow to get his revenge on Joe and take back the TNT title, unless they want Wardlow challenging MJF at, let's say, Double or Nothing in May. Because Double or Nothing is going to be 1 year since Wardlow, I mean, he didn't just beat MJF in the opening match this year. He demolished him with 10 power bombs. He squashed the man who now is the AEW World Champion. The last time they were in the ring together, Wardlow beat him decisively. So regardless of what they've been doing with Wardlow, I don't think it would take very long to rehab him. He goes on a tear, he goes on a win streak. And then 1 week, when MJF wraps up whatever program he's in the middle of, let's say in March or April, Wardlow comes out 1 week and says, Max, it's time. I want my title match. Because he has a win over MJF. MJF never got his win back over Wardlow. You don't even need to have a number one contenders match. You don't even need to have a battle royal or a tournament, all that stuff Tony Khan loves to do. Wardlow has a legitimate built-in excuse to want to go after the AEW World Championship. He's got a history with this man. So I bring that up because if that is the, and I don't know if that's the direction or not. I'm just saying, you know, 1 year later, right? I think there's a story you could tell there. So if that's the case, then why put the TNT title back on him? Especially if the TNT title is not going to be on the line against MJF. Why put it back on it? There's an argument to be made. Why put the TNT title back on a man who should not be losing? Because if you put it on him, he's going to probably have to drop it before he gets to the match with MJF. But then that would defeat the whole purpose because you don't want him to lose. So I just put that out there because maybe there's a chance he is not going to get the championship back. Maybe his revenge on Samoa Joe is costing Joe the belt, but not actually winning it back. That is a possibility. I don't think it's a great possibility. I still think he's going to get the TNT title back. I do think that's going to be the end result of this. But I just kind of, you know, I throw that out there as a possibility. Maybe he doesn't, and here's why. Because he could definitely be lined up as a challenger in the next 6 months for MJF. But this was not a burial. This is what I wanted to address here. Because I was already seeing comments in the chat, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of other chats and a lot of other places where you're going to hear that Wardlow was buried. If you were to make the argument that Tony Khan, in a way, sort of buried Wardlow through his booking over the past several months, you would get no argument out of me because I've talked about this on the podcast. Tony Khan dropped the ball big time on Wardlow. His moment, his star-making moment, should have been the win over MJF in May. It was completely overshadowed by everything that happened with MJF, all the controversy coming out of that weekend. MJF lost the match. You know who really was the loser in all that? Wardlow. Because nobody was talking about his win over MJF. Everybody was talking about the loser of the match and not the winner. So then he wins the TNT title and he gets phased down. FTR, phased down. Wardlow was the TNT champion. You tell me, do you have very many memorable moments from Wardlow's reign as TNT champion? What is the most memorable moment to you of Wardlow's reign as TNT champion? Because I don't have a single one. I can't tell you one. I know some of the people he wrestled, you know, feuded with Jay Lethal, and I can tell you some of the opponents he had. But I can't tell you a single memorable fucking thing this guy did when he was the TNT champion. He had that title for months. That is a failure on Tony Khan's part for cooling down Wardlow the way that he did. Now he's got to try to heat him back up again. It's like taking food out of the freezer, right? You got the piping hot. Then you let it get cold again. Now you got to heat it back up. It's not going to taste as good. Same concept. It can be done. Wardlow is not doomed. He is not buried for life. But this match tonight was not a burial of Wardlow. They handicapped the guy going into the match. They clipped his knee. It was part of the story of the match. So they did what they felt they had to do to try to protect Wardlow, even though he was going to lose. He passed out. He didn't tap out. He didn't give up. He didn't get pinned, right? So they did what they felt they had to do to try to protect him. And I do think in the end, he'll end up, you know, getting the championship. This is not the end for Wardlow. So I wanted to get that out there because I know that's what people are going to be saying. And I'm not disagreeing with you that, again, Tony Khan dropped the ball. And where he is now at the end of the year as compared to where he was when he laid the Dynamite Diamond Ring on the mat for CM Punk to use at Revolution and the people went nuts for it. And every week that went by after that, the people were just dying to see him fucking haul off and knock MJF's block off and punch him right into the middle of next week. And then what they did at Double or Nothing, you get no argument out of me. But I don't want to hear that tonight. Oh, this was a burial of Wardlow. This was not a burial of Wardlow. I've seen people buried on TV before. I know what a burial looks like. This was not a burial of Wardlow. But I love that we have Samoa Joe back, healthy for now, and dominant. This is like the Joe of old. You know, obviously he's older, he's a little bit heavier. I mean, I'm not saying it's the Samoa Joe from Ring of Honor, but this is a side of Samoa Joe, a version of Samoa Joe. Because of injuries, and because also Vince McMahon didn't see him this way and made him a fucking commentator on TV after the concussions and all that. This is a Samoa Joe that we have not seen probably since, I would say, the NXT days. You take it back to the NXT run in 2015, right? When Joe would come out and he would scream, Regal! Right? He would scream Regal's voice. Makes me sad that Regal's not there anymore. Maybe we can get Joe screaming Regal's name. Been a long time. And it's cool to see him back in the ring doing his thing, title on one shoulder, title on the other shoulder, featuring the TNT Championship in main events, which is something that we've seen more of in the last few weeks than we saw maybe ever in AEW. We, you know, the TNT title might be highlighted in the main event a few times when Cody had it, But I feel like we've seen it in this position more recently than we have before. The only thing I would say this, right, with what they did with Darby. My thought watching this, when I saw Darby come out and make the save at the end, it seems to me like they may be setting up for a triple threat match. And I would throw this little word of caution out there. If they're going to do a triple threat match with Wardlow, Joe, and Darby, Darby Allin is very popular. Fans love Darby. The fans also like Wardlow, but he has been cooled off. My fear for Wardlow, you do a triple threat match, it's going to be very different than what we saw at Full Gear. You had Powerhouse Hobbs was the third man in that match with Wardlow and Joe. And Hobbs had his fans too, because the people want to see him get pushed also, but he's a heel, right? If you do a triple threat with Darby, I would almost guarantee you that the people are going to want to see Darby more than Wardlow win that championship. And that could kind of blow back on Wardlow, who, again, doesn't deserve that, and that's not his fault. But I would say Darby is more popular right now than Wardlow is. So I think you run that. I think I could see why they would want Darby in there to take the punishment, but I think it could blow back on them. So that would be my only fear. If the idea is to have Wardlow win the belt back in a triple threat match, you might have people who want to see Darby win it more than Wardlow. And then if Wardlow does win it, yeah, maybe he gets a good reaction, but maybe it's lukewarm. Maybe it's not the kind of reaction he would get if it were one-on-one. One-on-one is always going to be the more ideal situation. But I also think back to the match that Joe and Darby had on TV a few weeks ago. And Darby, how he wasn't, carried out on a gurney, I'll never know. But that was fun. That was a fun match. So I would love to see more from Joe and Darby. But I look at a possible triple threat and what the fan reaction might be. And I don't know if that'd work out too well for Wardlow. But on the whole, I thought it was a fun show. I enjoyed the show for the most part. Again, the women's tag match, not so much, and that wonky spot there at the end. But I like the focus on a lot of the younger talent tonight. Again, my favorite match was the Moxley match and the Claudio tag match against Top Flight. And them doing their part to try to really put those two kids over. The reaction to Jungle Boy coming out and Hook. Again, they've got some real solid young cards to play here heading into this new year. They've got a really solid nucleus in this company that they can shine with going into the new year. We saw that. We saw that on display here tonight. So the future, as far as talent-wise, the future looks bright for AEW. A lot of it just comes down to the television future for this company. As they head into the later part of next year and they're going to be negotiating a new television deal, that really is going to tell the tale as far as the future of this company is concerned. If they can get more money and where they end up, that'll dictate how much money they'll have to sign new talent and to grow the company. That will be one of the very big stories to follow in 2023. As far as the future, it's very important to have a healthy number two. I've always said this from the moment that AEW was formed. You don't even have to watch AEW. But you should all want to have a healthy, strong number two to WWE. We saw what happened when there's really only just a healthy number one, okay? That's not good. That's not good for anybody. It's not good for the fans. It's not good for the talent. So I want AEW to, continue to grow and thrive and do well so we can have the back and forth between the two companies and talent. You never know where they may end up, right? I just think it makes it more fun for the fans. But that television situation, and there's a lot of bloodletting going on at Warner Brothers Discovery. It's not great news over there right now. I don't know. I don't know what the future is going to be heading into next year. But talent-wise, I think they're in a very good position. Now, Rampage on Friday has Orange Cassidy defending his All-Atlantic title against Trent Barretta. We are going to hear, right? We'll hear from Jon Moxley and we'll hear from Jamie Hayter. That was also kind of weird that we had that great match last week with Jamie Hayter and Hikaru Shida, who tore it up in the main event. That was just an excellent match. And there was nothing. There was no follow-up. There was nothing on the show tonight involving Jamie Hayter at all. Swerve Strickland will go one-on-one with Wheeler Yuta as well, and Jade Cargill will defend her TBS championship against Kiera Hogan. So that is the lineup for Rampage coming up on Friday night. This is the Twitter poll at Solomonster. You can vote. So far, we have over 73% thumbs up for the show tonight, 14, almost 15% thumbs in the middle, and 11.6% thumbs down. So that is a strong thumbs up so far for Dynamite. You can go vote at Solomonster on Twitter is the place to go. So we head on over to your Super Chats. I should also mention to you, before we get into all of this, and again, your questions, comments, send them on in. I will be reading all of your messages here, but Friday night, we have a very big SmackDown show. John Cena is back. John Cena and Kevin Owens are going to be teaming up against Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn. So that match is coming up on Friday night. And then on Saturday, I'll be live after that. Then on Saturday, that is New Year's Eve. And as we have done for the past past two years, we've done the New Year's Eve stream. This year it falls on a Saturday night. So I will be doing it third annual Solomonster New Year's Eve bash, I guess you would say. So if you are free, or even if you're not, if you're entertaining, maybe you're entertaining guests at your home, you can bring up the sound off on your big screen TV in the background. And we could all hang out and ring in the new year together. So that'll be on Saturday night. I'll let you guys know on social media what time. Probably about 11 o'clock. And I'll be talking about Wrestle Kingdom. We'll do Wrestle Kingdom predictions and answering your questions and hanging out. So that'll be on Saturday night. And then on New Year's Day, you get a brand new podcast from me. Episode 789. I will be doing my predictions for 2023. The annual prediction show. Talk about the Ric Flair documentary on Peacock and all the news of the week. So, first day of the new year, you get a brand new podcast, as you do each and every week, right? Never ends. I told you, this train never stops. It just keeps going. We're going to need gas at some point, but the train just keeps moving along. All right, let's get to your messages here. Lakers Pats dropping some love. Says, thank you to whoever gave me a channel membership. Yes, Lakers Pats was gifted a channel membership by a mystery individual. Thank you to that person. Queen Fire Panda, $10 super chat. Is RSPW back or will it be an annual tradition? Either way, thank you for digging it out of its earthly grave. Well, again, it's not as frequent as it used to be because, again, there's only so many posts that I can dig up. Unfortunately, all the old news group posts are not accessible. So I would, if I did a new one every month or every week, I would run out of content pretty quick. So, no, you will not have to wait a year. There will be more new installments, and channel members will get early access to those installments, probably for the first 24 to 48 hours. That's one of your membership perks, but I don't know when the next one will be. I'm hoping to do one, if not in late January, then by February, maybe every other month. But yes, there will be more RSPW coming soon, I promise. Dorian Moore, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s, booked a WWE War Games. Yeah, I'm not gonna, I can't sit here and start booking, but you know, you have a lot of the usual suspects in there. You know, you gotta have Bret Hart in there, you gotta have Kurt Angle in there. You got to have Steve Austin in there. You know those guys have to be in a War Games match. Now, if you're talking, well, you're talking WWE, so I can't use WCW, then, right? So that eliminates some of the names I would have used, but that gives you a sense of who you can expect in there. Crypto and Poker at 100,000 subs. Do we get the noodle pudding recipe? Maybe. Yes. How about that? At 100,000 subs, you'll get the noodle pudding recipe. Because we're not going to hit 100,000 subs. Unfortunately. I wish I could sit here and tell you that we would, but it's not going to happen. But if we do, yes, you'll get the noodle pudding recipe. Josiah Ball. What's up, Solomonster? Just showing some love. Thank you, Josiah. Appreciate that. Justin Jack, McDonald's effed up my order. I don't know why you're telling me. You should talk to McDonald's. Make them unfuck up your order. I can't. Unfortunately, I can't fix the order for you. I don't have access to all the food. Otherwise, I would make you a new burger. You don't want me to make you a burger. You don't know what I would put on this burger, man. I would create something the likes of which you've never seen before, man. I would put all kinds of ingredients on top of this burger. Call it the Solomonster Burger. Frankie Rodriguez, do you think if Punk, Adam Page, and the Elite find a way to make it work, could they change the course of pro wrestling in the future? No. I don't know why. Why do people think that they're suddenly going to sing Kumbaya and make up? I mean, it's a nice dream to have, I guess, if you're a fan of those guys, but no. And even if they did, there's definitely, you know, money to be made, but change the course of pro wrestling, it's not... I don't think it's going to change much of anything. Tyler, Dragon Lee has signed with WWE. Triple H is the man. Well, that is the first I'm hearing of it, but if so, congrats to Dragon Lee. I'll have to look it up and see if that is legit. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, me. Trying to save money, also me. Gifting memberships randomly. Well, thank you. Dr. Dakota Scorpio showing love to the channel, gifting memberships to random people. It's very kind of you. Anti-Ambishop 07 with the $20. $20 super chat. Happy holidays. Great dynamite tonight. GWS for ROH Original Deranged. Get well soon, he means. Next month is going to be massive for pro wrestling. Thank you, Solomonster, for everything this year. Well, thank you. You've been part of many of our streams, and you've dropped a lot of donos, and I can't thank you enough. And yes, best wishes to Deranged. I saw he has a GoFundMe up. I saw the pictures of his knee injury. He suffered a horrific leg injury. I saw that the stitched-up scar. It's down like half his leg. Apparently he's going to be unable to walk properly and wrestle for at least a year, so get well soon to Deranged. Hey, Dr. Dakota just gifted yet another channel membership, this time to User No Longer Exists. Well, I hope that's just the username and that you didn't gift the membership to a user that no longer exists. Rizzo says, Dragon Lee to WWE according to Twitter. Well, I'm going to need a better news source than Twitter, so I will check that out. Groovy Goose says, forget money in the bank. Dominic has mommy in the bank. I hope Dominic got bailed out. I haven't checked to see if he's still behind bars. Jay Baker says, Daddy Doom is the name of the girl with MJF. Daddy Doom? Is that her wrestling name? Because if she's not a wrestler, I would love to know what the Daddy Doom, what she does for a living. I think Jay Wong might want her to step on it. Drew Johnson! Dropping the $5 super chat. Solomonster, you're the man. Thank you for all that you do. Drew, thank you. I know you've been a supporter this year as well. I appreciate that very much. Slim Yoshi, hope everybody had a good Christmas. And Solomonster, do you mind a birthday shout out? My birthday is tomorrow. Also, did you see the Dragon Lee news? Well, I've seen it now. But happy birthday, Slim Yoshi. I don't know how old you're going to be, but I wish you a very happy birthday. Have a shot for me. King Bling Blah, should Taz come back? One more match teaming with Hook. I don't think he has to. I don't really have any interest in seeing that. GMB is back with the $5 super chat. Rank these future feuds in terms of intrigue. Starks and Danielson. Carmelo and Rollins. Walter and Braun. Swerve and MJF. I would say the one that intrigues me the most is probably Walter and Braun. Walter and Braun intrigues me the most. Swerve is weird because Swerve's a heel, and I like Swerve as a heel. So that's kind of a weird one if you have two heels. I'd go Walter, Braun, I would say Carmelo and Rollins, and then Starks and Danielson, and then Swerve and MJ, in that order. Nick Grasso, also talking about Dragon Lee. Apparently ESPN mentioned Dragon Lee. You know, didn't Bandido sign with AEW, and everybody made such a big deal about, oh, Bandido, he signed with AEW. Have we seen Bandido once on TV since? This is what I mean. Chris Jericho had that match with Bandido on TV and was so impressed. He went to Tony Khan and said, we have to sign this man, right? Tony Khan was marking out on stage in front of the live crowd when the TV show ended before Rampage about, you know, Bandido. And for a while, it was like, who's he going to sign with? He had interest from WWE and he opted to sign with AEW. And I think he signed the contract. I think it's official. And we haven't seen this fucking guy once on TV since. Unbelievable. Or did we? Maybe in a tag match, but I mean, you could count the number of times on one hand since then that we've seen Bandido and still have fingers left over. It's like it's just, I don't know. Even if he signed to Ring of Honor, I mean, how many Ring of Honor guys have they featured on TV? You know what I mean? Like, Ring of Honor has no show. Let's get Bandido some reps on TV at least. It's just comical. Did I watch Y2J's WWF debut live? Yes. I used to watch Raw live every single week. If they were in New York, I would have been there. If they were in Chicago. Mr. Notorious Chico 86, do you ever think Kenta will return to WWE? I know his last run was injury plagued, but he seems healthy. Also, keep up the great work. I don't know why he would go back. Why? I mean, yeah, I know Vince McMahon isn't there anymore, but no. I think he still has PTSD after the run that he had in WWE. I see no reason for Kenta to go back. Hulkling 93 with a $10 super chat. Sad, but like the song, all Ruby does is lose, no matter what. Got victory on her mind, but can't never win enough. And every time she steps in the ring, her L's go up, and they stay there. You're quite the lyricist, I have to say. We've got deep, delicious chicken and turkey with flavor. Should Jim Johnston be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame? Absolutely. He should be a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame. Tyler, actually Deep Delicious with a second one. I didn't watch it entirely, but why didn't Ruby Soho pull an Eddie Guerrero spot? Because she's a dumb babyface, that's why. Because they booked her like a dumb babyface. And they're trying to put heat on Ty Mello. But I don't really care. And I'm gonna guarantee you that most people probably agree with me. Tyler says, do you see FTR going back to WWE? Next year, no. No, I don't think so. Lost the Sauce Boss with the $4.99, dropping this now as I will probably be intoxicated for the rest of this year's streams. Shout out to Sweaty Solomonster and the Money Spending Mets. That sounds like a children's book, the name of a children's book. Sweaty Solomonster and the Money Spending Mets. It sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. Metal Rules 5 with a $25 super chat. If you get a chance, look up on YouTube an early 90s WCW tag team called the Ding Dongs. That entrance theme is great. I remember the Ding Dongs. You don't have to tell me to go look them up like I've never seen them before. Oh, believe me, I'm very familiar with the Ding Dongs. So that entrance theme may have been the only good thing about the Ding Dongs. Drew Johnson with a $5 super chat. MJF against Darby is the match. Put Darby over, the place would explode. Well, as I've said before, they had that great match to open up Full Gear last year. And I think that Darby is absolutely a candidate to end MJF's run as the AEW champion, whenever that run comes to an end. Darby is on the short list of people who I could see taking the title from. Frank Aquilino, $4.99. Great trios match, and the acclaimed guide was hilarious. You speak the truth about Wardlow, but it's good to see the TNT title elevated. Well said. Frank also says, Ty Mello is a darn good wrestler, and no one talks about her. She should be a big star in the women's division. That's like the Elaine dance from... What am I doing in that super chat? Ty Mello was better than she was given credit for in WWE, and it was puzzling to me why they let her go, and she had potential, and I think she still could have potential. But, like, in the match tonight, and I don't even just mean that one spot, just some of the stuff that she does is too telegraphed. And the timing is what really screwed up that spot, in the match they had tonight. So she's still rough, but she is very good. Now, I'm not saying she's not good or she can't be very good. I've seen examples of her in the ring, and she can be very good. Just tonight was not one of those nights. I just was not impressed by what I saw in that match. Deep Delicious says, Warner Brothers Discovery will not give AEW a new TV deal in 2023. So I challenge AEW to prove me and doubter wrong. Motivation for Tony Khan. Well, I'm sure Tony Khan is going to be very motivated by your super chat. He may be in the live chat right now. I mean, who knows, right? He used to supposedly creep around message boards back in the day. He could be in here right now. How do we know that Mr. Dynamite in the chat is not Tony Khan? How do we know that Beowulf is not Tony Khan hanging out here? Uffman Entertainment, Sound Off Train is electric. No gas, no stopping. Well, we just got to find a place then to plug me in. That's right, everybody say hi, Tony. We see you, Tony. Rizzo, do you think FTR is leaving AEW soon, or are they just teasing people with their comments? You know, I don't know. Am I the only one who's just sick to death of some of these wrestlers and their cryptic tweets and their cryptic comments? Just, you know, I'm getting to the point where I don't even care. You know what I mean? Like, so cryptic comments aside, I don't think they're going back to WWE next year. If they were to leave AEW, I've heard Dax say that, you know, maybe they'll take a year off and they'll just book their own shots and do indies and stuff. I just think that next year, they'll probably be in AEW for a while, but if they were to leave, they're not going right back to WWE. I don't. EJ Slamp with the $4.99. How come you did not mention Punk as this generation's Bret Hart? Both are controversial, think highly of themselves, and massively over in their hometown. What is controversial about Bret? I fail to see. I know what's controversial about Punk. What is controversial about Bret Hart? I don't see the comparison. Bob the Builder. Swerve is AEW's biggest acquisition of 2022. Swerve is great. Swerve is, if anything, I think he's actually underrated, to be honest with you. But especially Swerve as a heel recently, I think he's been great. That segment last week, not great, but I like Swerve. HBKC83, if you had the choice, who would you have end Goldberg's win streak in WCW? I've talked about this before. I would have had DDP do it. That would have been my choice. Yukio Rules, $10 super chat. Just wanted to show some love, and also your laugh is infectious. My laugh is so infectious, you may have to take a COVID test then. No, I appreciate that. Thank you, Yukio. That's very nice of you. We got the God of Seduction. $5 super chat. Add a new feature to the Be the Booker stipulation, picking from specific eras, pay-per-view location, champion. You really want to create all this extra work for me? You know, I created all those animations and everything. I know it seems so simple, but it's extremely time-consuming. So, if you want more RSPW Rewind, you know, you've got to prioritize here. I would consider, I'm always looking for stuff to add to be the booker, but as far as doing all of the things that you just mentioned, it would be way too time-consuming. Stipulations is a possibility, though. I can get a picture of a table, I can get a picture of a ladder, I can get a picture of a ball-peen hammer, brass knucks. Adding stipulations is a possibility. Rizzo, I saw another kidnapping in the NXT parking lot. Vice and Wall Street Journal should really do a piece about this. It's the most dangerous place in all of wrestling. Keyshawn Johnson, buy or sell second half of The Undertaker's career or second half of Shawn Michaels' career? That's good. Second half of Shawn Michaels. And Keyshawn says, what's your favorite incarnation of The Undertaker? My favorite incarnation of The Undertaker I will always have an affinity for the original Grey Glove Undertaker. His matches sucked compared to the matches he had later in his career. But to me, the original is still the best. And even I like Purple Glove Undertaker that came right after that too, like 94 Undertaker. But again, the matches that he was having back then were so... It was just... They're so terrible. You know, with Kama and with Mabel and Giant Gonzalez and... I actually enjoyed the feud with Yokozuna. I like that feud. But, I think that's always going to be my favorite incarnation of The Undertaker. Was the original. Rizzo says, I'm with you. I am sick of the cryptic crap. Yeah, I mean, again, so many of these guys, they'll go and they'll make cryptic comments, and then when people start speculating on things, they'll complain that, oh, well, this is false information, or, you know, the fans are speculating on stuff, and they shouldn't, you know, it's none of their business, or they're speculating wrong. Well, what do you think is going to happen when you make cryptic comments about certain things, you know, that people don't have answers to? If you don't just come out and tell people, you know, or... You know, straighten out the record on whatever it may be. That's what people do. They speculate. And then they get offended. They get upset. Well, if you weren't cryptic in the first place, that wouldn't happen. You would just come right out and say it. One of the things that annoys me. I'm continuing with my Festivus grievances here. Festivus is continuing into this month. Into this week, rather. Winston Smith. Why don't we get heels like 99 Big Boss Men anymore? Because that would not be PG. I was thoroughly entertained. It was completely tasteless and classless, but a lot of the shit that the Big Boss Men did back in 98 into 99, it was mainly 99, because he came back October 12, 1998. I know that because it was... Raw at the Nassau Coliseum. I'm almost positive it was October 12, 1998. I was at that show. That was my belated birthday gift. Were tickets to the Nassau Coliseum for Monday Night Raw. And that was the night the Big Boss Man came back. That was the night that Stone Cold was going after Vince McMahon on stage when he was wheelchair bound. And there were a bunch of guard dogs, like Dobermans, and holding Austin back from attacking McMahon. There it is again. Why am I always dancing in these super chats? What is with the dancing? I'm like a dancing fool here. But in 99, I mean, think about some of the stuff the Boss Man did, right? He duped the Big Show into believing that his father was dead, right? Then I think his father actually did die, so then they had a funeral. And then he interrupted the funeral by driving a car through the cemetery, and he chained the casket with his dead father in it to the back of the car and dragged it through the cemetery. And the visual of the Big Show body surfing the casket and then falling over and doing the tree bump. And flipping ass over tea kettle is one of the great moments in Monday Night Raw history, right? So he did all these things. He broke into, or maybe he didn't break in, but he got into Big Show's mother's house and forced Big Show's mother on live television to call her own son a bastard. He read a poem on Monday Night Raw about the Big Show. I think it was one of these grief poems, right? With that line that was, I mean, my God, with the parting line, if I had a son as stupid as you, I would wish for cancer so I would die too. Like, this guy was like next level fucking heel in 99, right? And then Al Snow. And he cooks Al Snow's dog. He feeds it to him and says, here's some pepper steak for you. Poor Pepper was turned into pepper steak. And he forced Al Snow to eat his dead dog. Find me a better heel than the Big Boss Man in 1999. Do you think they would get away with that shit on television today? Are you out of your mind? You think Mattel would let them? Maybe Mattel would love it. Maybe Mattel would create like the Pepper toy. Right? We have a little dog. Boss Man would come with a little dog. And then there'd be like a little plate with food on it. That would be the dead dog, right? You'd have a little casket that would presumably have Big Show's, you know, father's rotting corpse in it with a little chain on it. They could make some money off that. You call it like the Big Boss Man playset or something. You have a nightstick in there. Man, they could have made a fortune off that. Very underrated heel. Was the Big Boss. He would be canceled. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Please. There'd be a lot of people back then who would be canceled. EJ says, Brett speaks his mind and pisses people off, and I love and respect him for it, especially when he badmouths Goldberg. Is that not controversial? No, I don't think that's controversial. Plus, you're talking about Brett now. You're not talking about Brett when he was a wrestler. I mean, if you're comparing the two of them now, okay, the thing I would say is that they both speak their mind. But, you know, when you pose that, you're posing it as comparing Brett as a performer to CM Punk as a performer. And I just don't see that comparison. Tuxedo T-Servo, enjoyed the return of RSPW Rewind. Always fun to revisit the birthplace of the online smart mark. Showing people that all of this existed long before social media. That's how this segment got started. Mark K with a $25 Hardy Monster Super Chat. Who should end Hook's streak? He has no promo skills, no in-ring storytelling, and refuses to get heat from a 7-foot giant. In my opinion, Hook needs Ricky Morton heat. So when he makes a comeback, it means something. Yeah, but Hook is not a Ricky Morton babyface. Like, Hook is just... Honestly, Hook is more comparable to Goldberg. And I don't mean that, like, they're the same size and they have the same kind of intensity. But he's just the guy who goes down there. His matches are quick and to the point. The people want to see him hit, you know, some of the judo throws and then the red rum and then just walk to the back and hit the showers. And that's what they want to see, right? You probably have a lot of women in the crowd who want to hit the showers with him. Because he's got that kind of appeal to him, right? So it's I guess in that respect, he's got Ricky Morton similarities to the Rock and Roll Express back then when the women would go crazy for him. But he's not really that type of babyface. He will have to get more expressive as time goes on. He will have to start cutting promos. I agree. You know, it'll take time, but he will grow and mature and evolve. But right now, it's almost like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. He doesn't have to do much, and the people go nuts for it. It's just a matter of finding him the right opponents. But at some point, he will have to, you know, evolve the character and start doing more. Deep Delicious Chicken and Turkey, $5 Super Chat. Miro, Hobbs, Hardy Party, Top Flight, Bryan Danielson, and Malakai Black will work New Japan matches in 2023. Dante Martin in the Super Juniors as well. I thought by now Danielson would be working the Tokyo Dome, and he's not. I do have other predictions on what I think we'll see, but I'm going to save those for Sunday. So You can tune into the prediction show for that. Rizzo, Sasha / Mercedes had a thank you message on Instagram, and it really looks like she's gone from WWE. Oh, she is gone. She is gone from WWE. She is finished. Joseph Brooks, who elevated the U.S. title more, Lashley or Rollins? Lashley. Rollins elevated the Intercontinental title more. I mean, before Walter came along. There was a period a few years ago where Rollins was having just, you know, kick-ass matches on TV for the IC title. But as far as who elevated the U.S. title more between the two of them, Bobby Lashley. Juan Ocampo. Like McAfee's boys say on their show, nonstop to insult one another, don't be a mark. I can see Pat making a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble. What is yours? Oh, I have a big surprise entrant for the Royal Rumble, but you're going to have to wait until Sunday to hear who it is. And I have a prediction for Pat McAfee next year as well. Got a lot of predictions on the podcast this Sunday. You got to tune in to find out. Low Key Lean, I'm happy that you enjoyed the RSPW. That's the longest one I think I've ever done. You want an hour of RSPW Rewind. There you go. Merry Christmas. Paul Heyman with the $5 Super Chat. Excuse me while I go do some intensive research to see what exactly this content was that got Mandy Rose canned from WWE. Be right back. Well, it's going to cost you $30. Enjoy. Thomas, $5 Super Chat. I agree with Tony's lackluster booking with Wardlow. It is a crime. Queen Fire Panda, what is the most underwhelming version of The Undertaker? Does not have to be the absolute worst version, just the one that was just so meh. Probably, I mean, honestly, the last version of him. The late stage version of him, when he should have already been retired. Can I vote for that one? Because if not, then I would go for the teardrop Undertaker that we started seeing at the very end of 96. The one who came down from the rafters in Madison Square Garden at Survivor Series as Batman when he was lowered from the ceiling. That would get my vote. Even though I did not care for, as you guys well know, I did not care for Ministry Undertaker. Not my favorite version of him, but there you go. One more look at the poll here. Still rocking that 73%. You want to vote at Solomazer? Let me know. I want to hear from you guys. Let me know what you thought of the Dynamite episode tonight. We close out Final Dynamite for 2022. We went an entire year. So how many, I mean, there was not one missed Dynamite, I don't think, right? Maybe I missed a stream somewhere along the way. I don't think I did. 52 straight weeks. You guys have been here with me reviewing Dynamite for yet another year. We'll do it all over again in 2023. We're not done here yet, though. Love Lie says, how do you know it costs $30? What? Just a little birdie told me, you know? Bird is the word, so. I hear things. And Paul Heyman, can you see a Magnus cameo at the Rumble? I can see that. But again, I'll have all my predictions on Sunday. Although he wouldn't be Magnus. Boy, you really are a TNA fan, aren't you? Still calling him Magnus? Has he been called Magnus in like 7 years? Keyshawn Johnson dropping a $4.99. Should the WWE bring something like the G1 or Bound for Glory series in for SummerSlam? I've talked about WWE doing its own G1 style tournament before. I think it's more likely under Triple H than it would have been under Vince McMahon. Yeah, I think that should be an idea that's considered for SummerSlam. Dr. Dakota Scorpio just gifted a channel membership to Daytona Green. Daytona Green, welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. You get access to the club. I'm unclipping the red velvet rope. You get to skip to the front of the line. You get to cut the line. You know how special that makes you? You can thank Dakota for that. You guys smashed. You still call Groovy Goose still calls the Young Bucks Generation Me. Well, you really are a TNA mark, aren't you? Man. All right, you guys smashed the goal. I thank you for that. 350 was the goal. I believe we're up over 400 now, and so it is time for the final, not the final time, but the final Dynamite stream this year to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Where we get to book ourselves, not one, not two, but three matches. And I want to go out on a high note with these Dynamite streams. I want good matches here. I want good professional wrestling. So we're going to start things out. I know we're going to book ourselves a gem. I know it because I believe it in my heart. I'm going to will it into existence. Here we go. We're beginning with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. One of the greatest of all time. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is a hell of a way to kick off men's Be the Booker here tonight. Look at that. He had to put that, what was it, kerosene? He had to put that shit in his mouth every night. Be lucky if he didn't give himself mouth cancer for that. You couldn't get me to do that. But he did it, because he's the dragon. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat going to go one-on-one with Pat McAfee. There you go. Imagine in his prime, Ricky Steamboat against Pat McAfee. I think that'd be a great match. Put Pat McAfee in the ring with one of the greats of all time. That's not too bad. I mean, but Pat's no Logan Paul. Logan Paul has picked this up. I mean, Logan Paul could be a future world champion, assuming that he doesn't get completely canceled in this whole crypto scandal, but that is a definite bell for that match. Now let's go to the ladies' side. A JM, look at this, popping up with a Russo on a pole super chat. I'm going to get to JM here in a second. Boy, you want to talk about supporters this year. Hey, JM, I hope you are going to hang out with us on Saturday on New Year's Eve. I don't remember if you were with us last year, but we had a big night last year. Hopefully you can join us. We begin with Xia Li. Xia Li, who has been getting a little bit of television time recently on SmackDown. Still doesn't get all that much TV time. I'm not quite sure why. Xia Li going to go one-on-one with Willow Nightingale. I like Willow. I like Willow. I think that would be a fine undercard match, I think. Willow against Xia Li. Feeling generous then. I'm going to give that the bell. Two for two. I like where we're headed here. Willow. We begin here with Sasha Banks and Naomi, the former WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. Clutching those titles just as soon as they dropped them on Johnny Ace's desk and said, fuck you, thank you, bye. They went home, never to be seen again. Sasha Banks and Naomi. Well, you know, we don't have very many women's teams here in tag team Be the Booker. So this is going to be interesting now. They may actually be the only women's team I have in here. So let's see. You know what? That's a great point. Graham in the chat mentions Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. I should put them in there. Actually, the Jumping Bomb Angels might be in there somewhere. I'll have to check on that. But anyway, let's see. Sasha and Naomi taking on the Lucha Brothers. Hell yeah. Let's get Sasha Banks in there with Penta. Let's get Sasha Banks in there with Phoenix. I love it. I love it. There you go. Hey, that may be a match that we see. If Sasha Banks is going to be traveling the world, who knows? We may get some Sasha Banks intergender matches. Sasha Banks goes to AAA. Sasha Banks goes to CMLL. Sasha Banks does a death match in GCW. Hey, stranger things have happened. Anything's possible. 2023 is going to be the year of Mercedes. We're going to see her all over the place. Yeah, I'll have to go back. I want to add some more women's teams. Mix it up a little bit. We can do Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Jumping Bomb Angel. I'm almost positive they're in there, but if not, I'll put them in there. We can make Alexa Bliss and Lily. Lily the Doll is a tag team. How about that as a team, huh? Asuka and Kairi Sane, right? They were a team for a while. Thank you, Groovy Goose. Kurt Angle thanks you. KGBLK24. Who in WWE would you like to see in the G1? Who would I like to see from WWE? Because if you said AEW, I would have said Bryan Danielson. From the current WWE main roster in the G1. You know, I think Seth Rollins would be an interesting one to see Seth in the G1. I'd love to see Walter in the G1 tearing it up. I think that would be a lot of fun. Either one of those guys I think would be great. JM with the $10 super chat. We have to wait until Sunday to hear your prediction for the surprise entrant into the Royal Rumble. You remind me of Mean Gene with that plug. I'll get my parents' permission before download. That's right. Make sure you get your parents' permission before tuning in. $4.99 for the first minute, $1.99 for each additional minute. I learned from the best. Mean Gene, right? He's the measuring stick. Deep Delicious Chicken and Turkey, the final Good Son scenario. Save one, let one go. Becky Lynch or Jamie Hayter? I think I'm going to save Jamie Hayter. EJ Slam, $9.99. My brother and I deciding we're going to Japan in 2026. We're going in the summer so I can watch some baseball and go to the G1. If you had the choice, would you rather Wrestle Kingdom or the G1? I feel like the G1, because then I could go to multiple shows in different places. I guess it also depends on how long my trip would be for. I mean, I wouldn't want to fly all the way over there and just be there for 3 days. You know, I'd want to be there for at least a week, probably. I feel like the G1 maybe would be more. I mean, look, I'd love to be in both. I think to be in the Tokyo Dome for a big Wrestle Kingdom show would be a lot of fun. But the G1, I can go to different shows in different buildings, some of the smaller buildings, you know, maybe Corkin. I think that'd be fun. King Bling Blah, buzzer or bell? Lucha Brothers against Lucha Dragons. Lucha Brothers and Lucha Dragons. Yeah, I give that the bell. And Thomas says Jamie Hayter has to get away from Britt. Eventually she will. EJ says he's going for 3.5 weeks. Wow. You're going for almost a month. You're basically going to live there. That's cool, though. That'll give you plenty of time, man. You know what you got to do? Go to Ribera. Ribera Steakhouse. I don't know what you look like, but tell them that you're a wrestler. Maybe they'll give you a jacket. Go to Ribera Steakhouse. Stop by there. Let me know how the food is. Love Lie just dropped $1.99. Thoughts on a 30-man Be the Booker on Royal Rumble night? That is not going to happen because the Royal Rumble is on a Saturday. And the Royal Rumble, because there are two Royal Rumble matches, is always a long night. And it's a very active night. We have a lot of super chats come in that night, which is great. And I read every single one of them. And even if I didn't do any Be the Booker at all, That stream is probably going until at least 2 o'clock in the morning. And then to do a 30-man Be the Booker is only going to prolong my suffering. So in the morning when I wake up, because I have a podcast to do the next day. So unfortunately, there will not be time for a 30-man Be the Booker. That is going to be a very long night. But it is one of the biggest streams all year. The Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble, I forgot how big the Royal Rumble stream this year was. I went back. I was looking at some of the earlier streams I did this year. And WrestleMania always does well. You know, and WrestleMania will have, you know, 55,000 views one night, 65,000 the next. You know, I think we peaked. We had over 4,000 people watching live, or 4,500 or something like that. Super chats are coming in, new channel members, a huge night. But the Royal Rumble was one of our biggest streams of the year. So that'll be a fun one, but that'll be a late one. Well, I just caught it out of the corner of my eye. Do my eyes deceive me? That was Oofman. Our boy Oofman just dropped a $50 super chat. He's getting his Royal Rumble donos started early here, and it's not even 2023 yet. $50 super chat. Odds are I will not be here Friday or Saturday night, as I have family coming in from out of town for New Year's. Just want to wish you and everybody a happy New Year. And just remember, in 2023, it's just wrestling, bro. It's just wrestling. Yes, bro. It's just wrestling, bro. Who cares, bro? Thank you, Oofman. That's very nice of you. $50. King of the night. You and Dakota for all those gifted memberships. Happy New Year, brother. JM with a $20 super chat. We could put JM on that same list. JM says, love the Big Boss Man flashbacks. What's your favorite Ray Trailer incarnation? Big Bubba? Or Bubber, if you're Dusty. Big Bubba Rogers, Big Boss Man, late 80s, early 90s. The Guardian Angel, or late 90s WWF Big Boss Man. Again, I have an affinity for the early incarnation of the Big Boss Man, not from the Twin Towers. After he lost the weight and he went singles and went babyface, he had the jailhouse match with the Mountie at SummerSlam in 91, and you know, he had the feud with Nails. And I grew up on that. When I think of the Big Boss Man, the first thing I think of, I don't think of the all black with the tactical vest. I think of the blue, you know, corrections officer from Cobb County, Georgia. But the stuff he did in 99 was very entertaining. Keyshawn Johnson, $4.99. Should the WWE bring something like the G1 or Bound for Glory series in for an event like SummerSlam? Did you send that twice? I believe you sent that twice. So I will answer you twice and say, I think that it's something that is worth considering. I think it could actually make SummerSlam a little more interesting, depending on exactly what's on the line, you know, how it's, which I assume would be a world championship match. But if they're going to bring back the King of the Ring and they're going to do a possible Queen of the Ring next year, I think it would be better to have the King of the Ring, you know, whoever wins that tournament, go on and have potentially a championship match at SummerSlam. So it may not be the G1, but the King of the Ring may be their answer to that. God of Seduction just dropped a pair of super chats on me. Dumped it right on my head. Thank you, Based Beerus, God of Seduction. Much appreciated. The Mountie in an American jail. Hey, those were great vignettes. From SummerSlam 91, when they took him away in the paddy wagon, and then they took his picture and they fingerprinted him and they booked him and they put him in the jail cell. That was great. That was great. They went to go fingerprint him. They kept saying, give us the finger. He goes, you want the finger? Here's the finger. Everything about that was just, it was so great. It was so great. Yeah, well, BlizzFan, look, if they don't do Hell in a Cell anymore as a pay-per-view, which I don't think they, I hope they don't. Hell in a Cell was in June this year. There's no more Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. They could do King of the Ring in June, just like they used to. He was hollering, "I'm the Mountie," in case you didn't know who he was. He wanted everybody to know that he was the Mountie. You know, again, there is something to be said. You know, we talk about Vince McMahon back in 95, right? And he was on some kind of acid trip of some kind with some of the awful gimmicks that we got, the Goon and Freddie Joe Floyd and Alex the Pug Porto and T.L. Hopper and Duke the Dumpster Drozzy and Dr. Isaac Yankum. I mean, it was just, he was obviously, you know, he was paying his wrestlers so little that they had to take second jobs. It was terrible. But having grown up on other goofy gimmicks from the late 80s and the early 90s, like, a lot of those gimmicks have stood the test of time. And we look back on them now fondly and we laugh about them and, like, talk about how entertaining they were. So there is something to be said. I mean, you have the sort of NWA fans where it was more serious, right? You didn't have the silly gimmicks until people like Jim Herd came along and people like that, and you had the fucking Ding Dongs. But you look back on the Mountie, you know, and the theme music for the Quebecers, you know, we're not the Mounties because they weren't allowed to call themselves, he wasn't allowed to call himself the Mountie anymore. So instead, the music went from the Mountie to we're not the Mounties. But, like, some of those gimmicks were so ridiculous, but, like, now you look back on them and it's like, it's fun, man. You know, that's what wrestling is supposed to be. I'm not against gimmicks. I'm against bad gimmicks. I'm against just terrible, terrible ideas and terrible gimmicks, but they're not all bad. You know, wrestling has always had goofy gimmicks, and not just in Vince McMahon's company either. Need I remind you of the Christmas creature in Memphis wrestling back in the day? As I said earlier, I'll be live with you Friday night after a very big SmackDown, so you'll want to be here on Friday night because there could be some big things going on at the end of that show on Friday. And then on Saturday night, come on back, a rare live Saturday night stream celebrating the new year, and then a brand new podcast, The Prediction Show, episode 789, dropping on Sunday. And then next week is going to be a busy week because it's the first Dynamite of 2023, a brand new look for Dynamite, the same day as Wrestle Kingdom. So most likely, you'll be getting two live streams next Wednesday. Plus Raw, plus SmackDown. So it's going to be a very big week. We're not stopping
Moo.
With this new year. Moo! Moo. Oh, my God. It's the $100 Moo Super Chat from JM. JM coming in here at the buzzer. I won't be able to join on Saturday, but here's a dono towards a bottle of Jack for the night of, in appreciation of all the entertaining content. Well, JM, you are the man. You have been a great supporter of the channel all year and past years as well, but all year long. I wish you a very happy new year, whatever you're doing, wherever you may be. And thank you very much for that and for the entire year. And I say moo to you. You have moved me nearly to tears. I appreciate it. Skywalker with the $4.99. Do you think Undertaker is waiting by the phone if The Rock does not come to WrestleMania? Undertaker has like a special burner phone in case WWE were to call him. It's like the bat phone. I think Triple H will let him rest in peace now that Vince McMahon is gone, but I think he has that special burner in case it ever rings. He knows what that call is for. And he's got his gear and he's, you know, probably still trying to keep in shape. He's like Flair. He gets the call, he'll be back in the ring. Dr. Dakota Scorpio with the $3 super chat. Team Vacant is now AAA Tag Team Champion. After Dragon Lee and his brother beat FTR for the titles before signing with WWE. That's right, you know, FTR were defending their AAA AAA tag team titles tonight, I believe. So, and it's funny because I figured they were losing the belt. They're losing all their belts. I think that's why they're losing the IWGP tag belts next week at the Tokyo Dome. They lost the Ring of Honor tag belts. They had a shot at the Acclaimed, and they lost that. Now, apparently, they lost the AAA tag team titles. There's only one set of tag team belts left. IWGP. I think those are going bye-bye, too. These guys were on a losing streak. So, anyway, that is according to Dr. Dakota. I have not looked up these results yet, but I had forgotten. I believe they were defending those titles tonight. Slim Yoshi. If WWE brings back King of the Ring and brings back Queen of the Ring, should they do both of them on two separate nights, yay or nay? Yeah, I mean, to do them both on the same night. You know, I miss the original format of the King of the Ring when they did the entire tournament, first round to finals in one night. I don't see them doing that again. I wish they would, but I don't expect them to do that. If they do, two tournaments in the same night would be complete overkill. So I think you just might have to. Now, if they're just going to do the semis and the finals or just the finals on pay-per-view, which would be stupid, but then you can do both. But you can't do, you wouldn't be able to, I would not think that you would want to do more than that for both the men's and the women's on the same night if you intend to have other matches on the card. If you would want to have a championship match or a tag team championship match, plus tournament matches, you're going to have men's tournament matches and women's tour. It's too much. Winter's Paw, thoughts on Dragon Lee in WWE? Does he need a match? I haven't even read the news for myself yet, so I have to digest this news first before I can actually comment on it. I don't even know what kind of deal he signed, how long he signed for, if any of this is even a done deal yet. I mean, apparently it is. Somebody said it's on ESPN, so I'm sure I'll be talking more about it either on Friday or Sunday, or both. And the God of Seduction, thoughts on AEW having a celebrity as a GM, not as a guest. I don't like the idea. I don't think they need a GM. Everybody knows Tony Khan is the president. What do they need a celebrity GM for? I don't like that idea. By the way, Shinsuke Nakamura is wrestling The Great Muta on, I believe, Sunday morning Eastern time. So I'm going to try to watch that match before I do the podcast on Sunday so I can comment on it, because by then we'll know the outcome of the match. Yeah, kind of lost in all the noise of everything that's been going on and Sasha possibly being at Wrestle Kingdom and Wrestle Kingdom also being next week. WWE is letting Nakamura wrestle in Pro Wrestling Noah against The Great Muta on New Year's Day, which is a pretty big deal. I know it's a big deal for Nakamura. So if I have a chance to watch the match, that'll be something else I talk about on Sunday as well. So yeah, whew, going to be busy. Busy weekend and a busy week. Thank you for all of the Super Chat love tonight. You guys are incredible. JM and just everybody else, we picked up 9 new channel members alone tonight. And I would say total so far, we're not even done with the month yet, but so far in the month of December alone, we have picked up probably in excess of 250 new channel members. And many of those have been gifted. And again, you're probably going to start to see it next week, where some of the gifted memberships will lapse and you won't be a member anymore. You might lose your badge and your little icon there. I hope that you will consider re-upping and rejoining on your own, becoming a channel member. But again, just all the people who have become channel members, gifted or otherwise, over the past few weeks, I thank you because your patronage and your support is what keeps this channel going and tells me that I'm doing at least a decent job. So thank you for that. Deep Delicious says, I can't wait. Wrestle Kingdom 17, AJ Styles appears. Karl Anderson is defending the Never Open Weight title. He's like, are you saying that he is going to appear during the Karl Anderson match? I don't know. I don't think so. We'll see. Anything can happen, right? In the wacky world, everything's upside down now in wrestling. So you really can never say never on a lot of a lot of these things. Except Punk working with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. That will never happen. All right, I'm out of here. I will see you on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. Until then, be well, stay safe. Again, if you missed it, please do check out a brand new hour-long edition of RSPW Rewind. It is on the channel. Hey, Joseph Suarez just became a subscriber here at the very last second. Joseph, you're getting in at a good time, buddy, because we got a lot of content coming. So yeah, go back and check out RSPW Rewind, and I will see you guys on Friday for the return of John Cena. I'll see you guys there.